Joining us, this is going to go quick. We're just doing an hour today. Calls are already heavy, but if you're quick, you should be able to get in with a question. We don't have a ton of questions yet. So if you have a question, a comment, a topic, go ahead and press one on your phone. The sooner you do that, the better your chances of getting through. So we're going to go ahead and get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Today is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power, and this is the show where we take your calls and answer your questions about everything: engines, maintenance, troubleshooting, fuel mileage, modifications, power upgrades, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and give us a call. We're going to get to those calls in just a couple minutes. Hey, guys, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good, good. What is Bruce playing hooky again?
Yes, he is. Yep. He called in about an hour ago, told me he wouldn't be making it to the show today. So we're Bruce-less again.
We are, but we'll be okay. I think we can handle it.
We'll manage, I'm sure.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
All right. So, John,
that was an interesting, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you and I have been really talking a lot about the, self-driving autonomous vehicles and electric vehicles and how things are changing. And I can't seem to open up anything anymore without seeing something about this. You sent me another article. I sent you an article. There's a lot happening pretty quickly.
I think it's happening a lot faster than we realize. There's a lot going on behind the scenes with it. And it seems that, we'll see it in our lifetime for sure. I really, really believe that you and I will see the day, at least where there are some lanes of self-driving or using it similar to a train, like the one that you sent me today. That was really interesting. It looked like a maglev with a attachment on it for hauling trailers, moving trailers around.
Yeah. You know, the one you sent me, in the article said, expect within the decade that we will have vehicles driving themselves, and they believe, and you and I have talked about this, it makes total sense, that we're going to see either platooning or self-driving trucks before we see it in cars, because there's a much bigger financial incentive.
Oh yeah, there's a ton of money to be made there for sure.
Yeah,
it's been happening quietly. I mean, there have been a lot of noise about cars, and the truck thing is obviously, some of these things are very well developed by the looks of it. And we're just hearing about it now. So they've done a nice job of keeping it under wraps.
Yeah, the prediction, and this makes a lot of sense, is that the first iteration that we're going to see of this isn't going to be a truck going down the road without a driver. There's going to be a human being in the cab, but the vehicle should drive itself most of the time, and the driver will be there kind of as a backup in case something goes wrong, which that makes sense. And, you know, when they talk about the fact that we've already got cars doing this in congested cities where there are all kinds of challenges that they have to try to overcome. And then they compared it with, once you put a truck out on the interstate, this is pretty simple. I mean, they're saying this isn't really that big of a deal. There aren't a lot of things to deal with. The technology's all there. It's just a matter of tweaking it, you know, getting some government approval, things like that. So when you look at it from that point of view, I think we are going to start seeing things a lot faster. The one I sent you from Texas A&M, they've been working on that for 18 years. Now, when I first looked at it, I thought, God, 18 years, are they already behind the curve? Because it almost seems a little old school. But
it does, yeah.
But the more I looked at it, the more I thought, you know what, for moving freight, it might make a lot of sense.
That reminds me an awful lot of, you know, an intermodal terminal train type thing, the Texas A&M deal. But the efficiency was what really got me on that one, was that, you know, how efficient it was, you know, how much it could move with very little energy, which I thought was right. The interesting part of that one.
Yeah, so for the people that don't know what we're talking about, Texas A&M has been working on this for a long time. It's almost kind of a maglev train, and they have these individual modules that would each hold one trailer, and their model is kind of 500-mile radius, almost a hub-and-spoke kind of system, where they'll move these trailers on these modules between points. And then obviously at that point, we're either going to have a truck and driver pull up and take it to its destination from there, or who knows, might be a self-driving vehicle pulling up and taking it next destination. So, you know, we might see a combination of both, but they're looking at utilizing the space in between, in the median, and putting in these, you know, these elevated, you know, it seems like a big cost, but I can't imagine that, you know, Texas A&M would have continued to work on this if it's not viable.
Well, they had to somehow justify it, and I'm sure find grant money to do it. So someone somewhere believes in it, and they've written some good material to make that happen and keep the project funded. So there's got to be some credibility to it. We're finding with the exploration we're doing along those lines here that, and as we're seeing with the super truck stuff kind of coming to fruition now too, that, yeah, that stuff is well researched and well documented and looked at well. And the monies that are doled out for those things usually means that someone really smart has looked into it and sees it's viable and helps to fund it. So when you see a project that, like that, that's gone on that long and has somehow found funding, that you've got to give it some credibility. You have to.
Yeah, I also thought today that we would be talking about Tesla's new big announcement, but they were supposed to make it yesterday. Now they put it off till tomorrow because they said it wasn't ready. So that leads me to believe it's not just an announcement. We're going to see some sort of a real-time demonstration. Most people are guessing that it is the second version of their self-driving vehicle, or their autopilot, not really a self-driving yet, but their second version of the autopilot. But nobody knows for sure. I guess we'll have to wait till next week on the Power Hour to talk about it.
Yeah, curious about that. I saw a couple of the Model 3, the new Model 3 is supposed to have the autopilot built into it. And I was in Indianapolis last weekend and I saw a few of them driving around Indy. I don't know if they're driving themselves, but that's the first I've seen on the road.
Yeah, from what I get, I haven't really been following this all that close, but I read some things about it this morning. The autopilot option is like $3,000. Not even all that expensive. That's reasonable. No. I mean, if you were going to buy a Tesla, why wouldn't you get that? For another $3,000? Of course I'm going to get it.
Definitely. I'm tempted on a Model 3. I really am. The deposits are still only $1,000, and yeah, they're starting to pop up now. And that's a $30,000 car. I mean, you can't buy a Volkswagen GTI for that much. So,
and here's the thing: where I live, and this is getting more and more common around the country as Tesla grows. But I'm right on the I-5 corridor in Oregon. I can drive from the Canadian border to the Mexican border free, back and forth.
Yeah.
Would never cost money. Tesla has charging stations on the entire I-5 corridor from the northern to the southern border, and it's all free. And those are the rapid charging stations.
Yep, the supercharged stations. Yeah, I've got a friend who came to meet me at Laguna Seca who drove down from Vancouver in his Tesla. So he did the whole I-5 corridor there. Yep.
Yeah, so depending on where you live, once you buy this $30,000 car, you might not have any energy cost.
Yep. So it's like times are changing. It's cool. I enjoy saying it. I really do.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great stuff. What anything else exciting going on over there this last week or so?
Not a whole lot new. Leroy's on vacation this week. It's the first one he's taken in a couple of years, we hear. So he's off doing nothing somewhere. So I actually called him this morning. I didn't want to bother him, so I shot him a text first. And said, hey, you have time to talk? He's like, yeah. I said, what are you doing? He goes, absolutely nothing. I'm like, okay. You need a day like that once in a while. I was very happy for him.
That's right. I'm doing absolutely nothing and a whole lot of it.
We've got a couple of we're getting some more remote tuning kits together, a couple of shops Midwest and farther going to be on board here. Going forward, I'll start featuring one of those shops. Each radio show will try and introduce you to somebody who's out there in the world with one of our remote tuning kits if you're interested in getting out for a remote tune. So we're working on that project still. We've got 8 or 9 of them out there now. Some of the guys aren't quite ready to start taking on customers yet. We're still got some work to do with them, but we're going to try to expand that program pretty rapidly here, and I'm going to try to introduce some of our listeners via the show here, you know, where they are, and give us some details on who's out there and what their capabilities are.
Yeah, I'd love that idea.
So that project's been ongoing, and we're getting some good response on that. At some point, we're gonna have to give territories, and we're gonna have to cap it at some point. But right now, we're still trying to get as many out as we can. We've got a fellow in Texas who's done quite a few tunes so far, and he's really happy with the program. And so that some are picking it up right away, and some guys are just so busy that I think adding another product, shall we say, is going to be a little bit of a learning curve for them. So
got it.
Give it some time.
I love the idea of each week on the show highlighting one of the shops that are doing that. I think it's a great idea. Help get the word out there and send some business their way. We're going to come right back and get to your calls and questions right after this. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is Pittsburgh Power, the Power Hour, and I've got Ethan and John with me, and we are going to get to your calls and questions. Let's go to Texas. Dan, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Are you with
Hello.
Us?
Hello.
Yeah, can you hear me?
You sound great. Go ahead.
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay, sorry. Question is for Pittsburgh Power. I had an APS light come on my dash. I have a 98 Freightliner FLD. The first thing they did was check the ABS module. They plugged into the module and said, well, that's it. Your module is, you need a new module. I'm like, okay. So I guess the test, when they tested it, just says bad, you know, and, the muzzle's almost the same size as the ECM. And my question is, I know you guys rebuild or redo or whatever ECM. I mean, a new muzzle for this thing's almost $800 to $1,000, depending on where you buy it. And it's basically the same type of design as an ECM. Can you guys rebuild or do you rebuild APS modules?
I've never personally seen one that up close. It would be, you know, interesting to know why they think it's bad, and make sure that they're correct on that assessment. I've never seen one go bad. It's normally a wiring issue from it, but I'm sure it's possible. Just never personally seen one go bad.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I hope it's not bad. I mean, the light comes on. You know, I know it could be one of the six sensors. It's just six sensors. And you have the read plate, what have you, on the wheels that you got to keep clean. And they all plug in, you know, to a harness that goes into the module. That's pretty much it. So they test it, and, you know, I mean, I didn't have it really extendedly tested. But when he told me, he says, well, your module's bad, you need a new module. I'm like, okay, thank you, you know. And went to go look into it and figured it was like $200, and it's like, well, they run like $1,089. I can get you one for $760. I said, forget it. I'm like, I mean, it looks like a computer hard drive. It kind of looks, it's almost, I have a VDEC 4, it's almost the same size as the ETM. And why can't they be rebuilt? I mean, for $700,000-$800,000, it's ridiculous to have a mod. I mean, if I buy a new ETM, it's like $1,000 or $1,500. That controls the engine. All this thing does is control the brakes. I mean, come on. Where do they justify that much money on an ABS module? I think it would be feasible for me to find someone who can either rebuild it or look at it or fix maybe the little problem in there. Or it's probably some kind of diode or resistor, I'm thinking. I don't know, but it just looks like a hard drive to me.
Yeah, I'd really want to see the entire truck, too, because I want to see what code or what is it telling them that this is bad. We've seen that a lot with ECMs where people say they're bad and there's nothing wrong with them. It's a wiring issue.
Right. Okay. That sounds good. I guess you guys never really rebuilt them. So, I mean, you can rebuild mine if you want. I trust you. So. I mean, I don't know. I'd like to get a rebuild, I guess, if I do need it. But I understand your point. So I was thinking about that, too, to get it tested out a little bit further, not to throw parts at it, which is stupid. So
yeah, I would have another shop take a look at it. And if you can, you know, even, like, email one of us what code it's sending, you know, it's going to turn the light on and it's going to have a stored code of, you know, what it thinks is wrong. Would be interesting to see, because it's too odd that the whole thing would be bad.
Well, you never know. It is 18 years old, and it is an electronic device.
I mean, it's possible. I want to
see
the
code,
though.
There could be a board in there that's come unsoldered. I mean, it's that's a lot to ask of a piece of equipment like that. There'd probably be no shame in it being bad after 18 years.
Now, I think we could forgive that. Let's go to Texas. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good.
Hey, I have a quick question. I've been heard you talk about the Model 3 Tesla. From what I've heard, they may not offer superchargers to those cars just because of the abundant supply of those cars and very few superchargers. So I'm curious what's going to happen when that comes out. I'm actually in the market of buying a used one right now.
I was actually looking at the website for the Model 3, and it does list supercharging as one of the options.
Available. So, okay, that's good. Yeah, I'm looking to buy a 13 or 14 P85. I've seen a few on the market in the low 40s, high 30s now, with still a lot of warranty left on them. So, sure beats paying $120 for a brand new one. So, we'll see.
Yeah, that's
we'll
for
see.
Sure.
But, John, I had a question in regards to the electric drive axle. I talked to you a few months ago about it because I'm actually considering, depends on what my truck's worth next year, I might be donating my Cascadia to you guys.
Oh, awesome.
You know, and I'm buying a 19 model. But if I order, because I would love to put one on. I'd love to be a guinea pig down in the future. Would a 6x2 configuration, is that what you're looking to install it in, or would it work with a 6x4?
That would be ideal. No, it's going to need to be a 6x2 configuration. You know, we'll just drive the front axle with the engine, and then the rear axle will be the one that's driven electrically.
Okay, that's kind of what I actually had an opportunity to get a test drive in the 2018 Cascadia over our company. We got one of the first ones in the country. And even though it's just kind of a demo setup for the truck, I'm going to spec my own out in the future. But I would love to be able to spec it with this idea of having that on there.
So to be able to build that
kind
on.
Of
yep.
An idea, do you have like a lead time or an idea? I mean, obviously you don't have a prototype out yet, do you?
No, we're still looking for money for that, to be honest with you. We've applied for grants. As I told you, we've recently educated ourselves. We talked earlier in the show about that sort of thing. And we've talked to a couple of investors, and we're still looking. We can't fund the proof of concept beyond design right now. So we've got a design, you know, thought up anyway, and we've got done some research, and we've done, you know,
everything leads us to believe that it's going to work and work well. I've not done any computer sims yet. That's something I'd like to look into doing to try to get some numbers, which would give me some ability to go raise money to do it. You know, the prototype version, you know, we're still looking for money to build. We don't have it. You know, it's not, we don't have enough in the bank account to just fund that ourselves. So we're still in that stage. So if we could get some help somewhere, somehow we could do it.
I definitely would like to be a part of that in the future and make the investment, because that's something I run Texas region. I run Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio every day. And I'm on U.S. highways 90% of my life. So, and I do a lot of stopping and starting, you know, and I'd love to, you know, definitely be a part of that, you know, or make the investment on my new truck, you know, to put that on there, because I'm self-funding. You know, I'm buying my own truck out of paying cash for everything. So I like to, I'm not worried about warranties or anything with my next truck. So, well, gentlemen, I appreciate it. Great show as always. And you have yourself a good day.
Terrific. Yeah, stay in touch, please.
Thanks for the call. Let's head off to North Dakota. Josh, welcome to the program.
Hi, guys. Got a 04 W900 with a C15 ACERT. The actuators, I guess, have been backed off and reprogrammed. I'm getting a little, I'm getting a hiccup, but usually with the cruise control on a slight pull where you don't really even have to take the cruise control off, it starts bucking a little bit. And one time, I've gotten it to throw a code once, the check engine light came on once while it was doing it. And I don't know, I couldn't figure it out on the scan gauge. It didn't seem to make sense, what code it was throwing. But I did the whole engine light flash thing with the cruise control with the engine off. And it, I think it threw a code of 67, or 67, which came out to be injector 6. And something wrong with injector 6, I guess. And somebody told me that the wires like to break right there on injector 6. Are you guys familiar with that? Or
I've seen the intermittent miss on a Cat B, the wiring harness before under the valve cover, where if something rubbed or the wire, you know, was pinched, but you know, before, and it just happened to get, you know, weak at this point, it'll have to be, you know, remove the valve cover and take and inspect the wiring harness. A lot of times you'll see a little like bubble under the wire, and that's where it's actually been arcing, and then that causes the intermittent miss.
Okay, and does that require a whole new wiring harness with all the right resistance, or can it just be spliced? Or
it's preferred to put a new harness in, especially if you find a bad spot. A lot of times, like if you just were to solder it back together under the valve cover, it's a harsh environment. The wire that Cat uses is really good at, you know, resisting the oil, the heat, and they do get old over time.
Okay, well, that was easy. I guess I'll, I'm afraid to open
take
it
a look
up
under the valve cover.
Okay, and are you guys getting a remote chop in the Northwest?
We've got a fellow up there. He's at the Oregon, California border now. We've got a guy in Southern Oregon right now. He's the closest one, right off I-5 there.
All right, we're going to get back to the calls and questions right after this break. Stick around, Kevin Rutherford. Back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got Ethan and John with me, and we're going to get right back to the phone calls. We're off to South Dakota. Gerald, welcome to the program.
Yeah, how are everybody doing today?
Good.
Good. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I got a little over 200,000 miles on a Pittsburgh Power rebuilt 60 Series Detroit, and it's always leaked oil from the front of the block. Talked to a guy, he's got a glider. Yes, same series Detroit in his truck. His mechanic set his overhead, and while he was in there, he supposedly replaced, like, he called it a diamond seal or a diamond gasket, and that solved the problem. Is that something that you ever heard of before?
Absolutely, yeah. That's probably where your problem is.
Because I've had it back to the shop there and with you guys about two or three times, and, you know, it's trying to address the leak, and it's always come back. And now I got a dedicated run where I'm running from Texas to North Dakota, and I don't make it back east anymore. So now I want to try somebody else to give it a shot to fix it, but I didn't want somebody just making up a part to throw on here.
No, that diamond seal is a common leak. That's a good place to start. I'm not so sure. I'd have to look up your work orders to see if we've tried that on yours or not, but that's definitely a good way to go.
Oh, okay. So I should just call you guys after the show and see if that's something that y'all tried to replace before.
Yeah, we could look your old work orders up and see if we've done that in the past.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll call this afternoon and see what's going on.
All right. Thanks.
Let's head off to Utah. Mike, welcome to the program.
How are you doing today?
Good.
Good.
Good. Hey, just instead of a question, just take a minute here. Got a comment. I had an ECM issue here a couple weeks ago. Needless to say, my shop said it was that. They know I have a relationship with Pittsburgh Power, so I gave them a call. ECM got sent back. We ended up doing a reman because it had quite a few issues. And realistically, quick turnaround, great people. I met Bruce on a snowmobile trip several years ago, met Aaron, and quite frankly, that's still the best business trip to this day I've ever made. So just wanted to call and say thanks to Pittsburgh Power, Ethan. John, I've talked to you on the phone but haven't met. But like I said, just wanted to say thanks, and everybody needs to thank everybody that helps them out every day, realistically, and support the people that support them. So appreciate it. Thanks, guys, for everything you do.
Hey, thank you.
All right, Mike, thanks.
Yeah, thanks for the feedback. Let's go to Montana. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. I've got a 14-liter Detroit, an 06 model. I just did a rebuild on it. Seems to be running just fine, not burning any oil. Power's good. Boost is good. But it's consistently running about 200 degrees less on the EGT. Is there a possibility I have the cam mistimed?
I don't think so. That's a pretty big jump if you went to another tooth. So 200 degrees less on the EGT was before you redid it? Cooler, yeah.
Yeah, the performance seems fine, and the horsepower seems good. The fuel economy is as good or a little better. What I've expected, I've rebuilt these before, well, the 12.7s before. I've never done a 14-liter. And you know how you time the cam? I mean, I made a timing pin for the camshaft, and the crankshaft, before I put the head on, I top dead centered it with a dial indicator. So I was confident I was on top dead center, but I can't believe it would be that much more efficient to run that much cooler on the EGT, but maybe it would. I mean, it was burning a lot of oil, and ultimately one cylinder was completely scored when I tore it apart.
Okay, so this is more efficient. Now, has your boost pressure increased?
No, I'm going to say it's the same.
Is it? Okay.
Now, I've got a custom tune on this, and I've got a set at 615 and a delete done, so, you know, it's a tons of performance out of this motor.
Well, that's really good that it pulled some temperature out of it. Yeah, I guess just the inefficiencies with the worn out engine were creating that heat.
Okay, so do you think it's worth my while to recheck the timing or just drive it?
I wouldn't mess with success if I were you.
Well, yeah, there you go. Okay, that's good advice. Another quick question on that. Is it worth my while, and I know you got to take the cam back out to do this, to retorque the head to run it, 400 or 500 hours, retorque the head, or is that really necessary?
We've never done that.
Okay.
I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay. Well, I'll just
keep
driving.
That's a torque to yield. That's a torque to yield bolt on there. I don't know that you'd want to do that. Did you put fresh bolts in when you did the head?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point. Yeah. I never thought about that. So
that's a no touch. Don't touch that. Nope.
Okay, yeah, no, I'm an old school guy where you used to, you know, retorque everything, but that's actually a very good point.
Yep.
Okay,
yeah,
well, I'll
just
bolt,
you're not gonna want to do that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, I'll just drive around and be happy then.
All right. Enjoy it.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Hey, and you do
Hold on. Mike, I was quick on the trigger. I'll let you finish your last comment. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying I bought tons of parts from Pittsburgh Power. I mean, I live out west. I never go out east. But everything I've ever bought from you guys, I've had your power box and power, other performance parts. Awesome. Awesome service. Awesome parts.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Great. Let's go to Indiana. Roger, welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Good. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. I'll try to make this quick. I have a 2004 International with a ISX Cummins. I was having some problem with the air dryer, air going straight through it. Replaced it with a new one and a new governor. And for some reason, it builds up to, say, 130 pound of air, then it comes back to maybe 120, then it goes back. It just keeps going back and forth and just continually exhausting itself. Won't stop doing that.
Have you tried another air governor? It just sounds like the air governor is malfunctioning.
Yeah, not yet. I haven't. It doesn't build up past 130, and then we set it back to 120, and it's doing the same thing, but it's a totally different problem from what originally started out with. It doesn't go over the ones,
right,
or wherever the governor set, that seemed to be where it's stopping at, and then it exhausts itself, then it comes back again, and it kicks back in, I guess, and goes back down and spits out again.
How far does it drop down after it gets to the governor pressure?
What's that, sir?
How far does it drop after it gets there?
Driver said about one, drops down about 10, 15 pounds, and it kicks back in again.
That's okay. All right. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you other than maybe try another one of those.
That's why, like you thought, it has to be, I would have thought governor related, but I haven't been back home yet to see it.
Yeah, that's the only thing that controls that. Yep.
Yeah, because it had a brand new governor and brand new air dryer put on.
Unless it's with a valve in the head, there's a valve in the head of the compressor that it could also be. So that ISX, you could change just the head. Cummins sells just the head for the compressor. That's a possibility.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, I do happen to have one. Cause a few years ago, the head did go bad on that compressor, and I sent a compressor and I'm knocking a hole in it. So I ended up, I
no.
kept that. So I kept
yeah, you
that.
Might want to try that.
So, yeah. Okay. All right. I didn't change that head when it went bad last night. Somebody else did on the road. Is there anything I need to be concerned about, or is it just bolt lift off and new one set
on? Bolt lift off, put it on. Yeah. You make sure the gasket surface is clean and you have a fresh gasket for it. But other than that, it's pretty straightforward.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your time. And
all right.
You're
thanks
welcome.
For the call. Oh, I think we're going to start this call. We'll have to carry it through the break. But Kent, go ahead.
Hi, guys. I've got a 3176 P800. It's a 92. I've got two of them, 92 and a 94. 94 I had trouble with that didn't have any power. $6,000 later at camp, we figured out it was the boost sensor. The other one I just bought, didn't have any problem with it, and now it's sucking air into the airline for the very random. It'll die out on us when we're hauling grain. We prime it, it goes again, but we can't figure out what's wrong with it.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. I'll give Ethan and John some time to noodle over that one, and we'll come back and talk about it right after the break. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're down to the final segment. I've got Ethan and John with me from Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to go back to the phones. We're talking with Kent in Minnesota. So, guys, what do you think?
You're going to have to go old-fashioned here and do a site glass test, or you could even get a piece of clear hose and replace one of your hoses with it and watch or work your way from the pump back at different places looking for air in the fuel stream on the way to the pump. So he's pulling air from somewhere.
What we did do is we replaced the primer pump because we thought it was just worn and we never really used it. And we just thought it was dried out, so we replaced that. And it didn't do it again for our 3 or 4 days. And all of a sudden it started doing it again. So we're just stumped as to why it was. We did that clear hose on the other one when we thought we were having air in the line. And it ended up being that boost sensor that the hose broke inside that box.
Okay.
So that one lost power due to that. Okay, so we can put that clear hose on, we can put a gauge on and check that out. But the other question I had, would it be a smart idea to take that boost box off and replace that hose inside that boost sensor box since they're about the same age trucks?
I'm not familiar with that, to be honest with you. That's not an engine. There were the boost sensor box. So does it run the fuel through it? Is that how?
Yeah,
how that
there's
works?
There's a chipboard inside of it, and then there's a small hose. And when I took the old one off, the other one, it was just soaked with fuel, and the hose was busted inside of it. Just a small, really small hose that loops through that boost sensor.
Well, that'd be a good place to start if you've experienced that once already with one of your other trucks there. That would be for sure. But, you know, the best way is, you know, with the clear hoses or sight glasses and also a restriction gauge on the fuel, too. Make sure you don't have a not pulling restriction somewhere.
Well, the restriction, that'll bring air into that. It'll
well,
draw
if you've
air
got something,
somewhere
that's,
then?
Something that's compromised there and a restriction farther downstream, it's going to draw air in.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, that
yep.
makes sense. And the other thing is, I did get a scan gauge from you, Kevin, about a year ago. I had my 6NZ that I run over the road. And since I've gotten it, I'm an old school, been out here 30-some years. I've actually gained a mile a gallon on this thing since I put it in. I want to thank you for that. And I do need to get this over to Pittsburgh Power. I mean, it's running great, but, yeah.
That's awesome. You know, it's John, it's interesting. When I first started looking at the scan gauge, I found one at a Camping World, and it was for RVs. And I thought, yeah, I'm going to play around with this in my truck because it's the same connector. So I put it in, and I was playing around with it. I thought, you know, this could be really useful for everybody else. Obviously, it's not going to help me. I've been doing fuel mileage stuff for, you know, a couple decades. I know how to drive a truck for fuel economy. So I called up the company. And I explained, you know, why the version they had for the RVs wasn't ideal for a truck and how we could change it. And they were wide open to the idea. So I gave him the ideas and he said, okay, let me program one and send it up to you. And you play around with it, send it back. And so we probably worked on this, you know, on and off for about 6 months. And the truck that I did most of the testing on the device was the Mercedes engine. I had owned that truck from day one, spec'd it. I was never happy with the fuel economy on it, no matter what I did with it. And we had over 1 million miles on that truck, you know, pulling for FedEx. And then I took it and used it to pull the RV. And during that 6 months, I improved my fuel economy by almost a half mile per gallon. It wasn't quite a half. It's probably 3 or 4 tenths, pretty solid during that time. And, you know, even though I knew all the things you should be doing to get better fuel economy, without having that instant feedback all the time, that was such a big help. So we hear people all the time, and guys like this that have been driving a long time, paying attention to fuel economy, they are good at driving. But having that instant feedback really helps a lot.
Oh, for sure. The data is always good. That's, that's pretty amazing. Yeah, even so after the amount of time you'd spend, you were able to improve that much.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get in some more calls. Let's go to Missouri. JR, welcome to the program.
Hello, guys. I got a couple quick questions for you. I've been hearing a lot of talk about...
JR, before you ask...
Can you hear me better?
There you go. I was going to say, it sounds like you're standing about 50 feet away from your phone. Go ahead.
Well, that's because I had the microphone on my head and set it in front of my mouth.
Got it.
Anyway, I've got a 14-liter Detroit in a 07 Century, and I'm wanting to do that remote tuning up here in Kansas City, and I'd also heard you guys do something with the EGR systems, which I do have a problem with mine. When I'm on a hard pull, my engine light will come on, and the code will come up and say EGT on the EGR system is too high, is the code that it records. And I'm trying to get to the bottom of this thing because it's a really good running truck, and it's got like 450,000 miles on an end frame.
That's an interesting code. Do you know anything about that, Ethan?
It could either be the thermocouple that measures it is not reading correctly, or in the EGR cooler itself isn't working properly.
Okay.
The efficiency on it's down a little bit.
That would make sense. Yeah. I need to clean that up.
I was thinking EGR cooler and to get it cleaned out, but I just don't know where to take this thing to get that done, because a lot of the shops I've run into, they just want to replace the thing. And, you know, rather than clean it up or whatever. But I've been hearing you guys talk about your EGR tune and your remote ECM stuff. So I'm trying to figure out what it's going to cost me so I can save up for it and get it done.
Well, the EGR work that we do is more of a maintenance than a tune. We don't do much tuning at all with EGR. And then that's on the more modern engines, though. We'd be glad to bring yours in here and work on it. We could clean that up, and we could probably get that all fixed for you pretty easily without throwing a bunch of parts at it. But
awesome.
Yeah, that's not so. That's basically for the newer trucks, the newer, you know, the common rail engines, the modern, the DD15s and the ISX CM2350s and 2250s that we do the EGR maintenance on. So they've got some pretty complicated systems on them, and we take them apart and clean them. Make sure all the sensors are working, functioning properly, and basically, you know, physically do a tune-up on it. We don't do any work in the ECM on the EGR system.
Okay. Well, don't you do some sort of custom programming on the engine computer, though, remotely?
Oh, yeah, we do that. Oh, yeah, we could tune it. Yep. Yeah, we definitely tune the engine.
That's what I was talking about with that.
Yeah.
This engine is a 515 horse stock, and I've got one of the scan gauges, and this thing, when I'm on a hard pull, it's pulling like 37 pound of boost, and I've never seen a Detroit pull that.
Yeah, it's only stronger.
The thing is, this thing is, I run 78,000 pound most of the time, and when I get out west out there where Kevin lives, man, this thing's just a dog in the mountains. And I don't know if it's got to do with that EGR thing or not. And I was looking for suggestions.
Do you happen to have a boost gauge in the dash?
No, I don't. I just got Kevin's scan gauge.
I have a feeling that 37 pounds isn't accurate.
Okay.
Yeah, I would also check the barometric pressure sensor and make sure it's functioning properly.
Okay.
Because if that's not functioning properly at different, you know, different locations in the United States, the truck may behave radically different.
Right.
Okay. Well, do you got any price range on what that ECM tune costs, so I know?
For that one, that would be, I'm not sure in Kansas City if we've got anybody there yet. I have to look at the list. I don't have it in front of me right now. I'm still learning this.
I think they said something about T&E.
T&E's got our T&E. Stuff, yeah. Are they close to you? Yep. But a tune for your engine would be $1,450.
Okay.
$1,450. You're welcome.
All right, you're welcome. I'm looking at the clock, and we just don't have enough time. You know what? I might try to take this one because I think we might be able to answer this pretty quick. Let's go to Georgia. Karen, you got about a minute and a half.
Okay, quick. I've got a 2007 ISX, or Kenworth ISX. I need to know, can I get into California? And also, the dealership's telling me I need a new ECM because I have a lot of corrosion around the connectors and on the cable. So they're telling me I need a new one or my truck's going to catch fire or something.
I'll give you the California answer pretty quick. 07 is not California compliant, so you have your 1,000-mile variable, and that's about it on that one. And can you guys answer the ECM question in 30 seconds?
All depends on how bad that it truly is, but I would clean it up off real good with some sort of contact cleaner and fill it full of dielectric grease to keep anything else out of there.
What's the dielectric
grease? And that's all we're going to have time for.
Yep.
Yep. I've got to wrap it up. Thanks, guys. John and Ethan, Pittsburgh Power. We will see everybody next week. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work. Master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody. Thanks for joining us. We've got to make it a short one today. We'll see you back here tomorrow for Destination Health.